thank you very much, and thank you for sticking it out to the last presentation of the last session of the day. I know we're all exhausted, so I will go through this as quickly as I can. We can get to discussion. I have no financial relationships to disclose. I have lots of fun personal and professional relationships, including with my hippie peeps in the picture there. A little bit of background on hepatitis B, although I'm sure most folks in the room are familiar with this. Hepatitis B is the most common serious liver infection in the world. It can cause a short-term infection, or it can cause lifelong chronic hepatitis B infection among many individuals. It is transmitted through direct blood-to-blood contact, through sexual transmission, but worldwide, the most common route of transmission is mother-to-child transmission at birth, which is also called perinatal transmission. There is a safe and effective vaccine to prevent hepatitis B transmission. It's very commonly used in the U.S. and in other countries. However, as you'll see from the stats in terms of new infection rates, it's not used nearly as well due to infrastructure and mostly infrastructure and delivery issues. So the map on the left shows you prevalence in terms of endemicity across the world. The dark blue areas have prevalence rates in their populations of greater than or equal to 8%. The medium blue is greater than or equal to 2%, and that would be considered intermediate prevalence, and then the light areas have prevalence rates of less than 2%. It's estimated that there are about 240 million people in the world who are chronically infected with hepatitis B and are at serious risk for dying prematurely from liver cirrhosis or liver cancer. It's also estimated that about 2 million people in the United States are infected, and we're going to talk a little bit more about that estimate. What we do know is that there are significant hepatitis B-related health disparities in the U.S., including African immigrants and Asians and Pacific Islanders. So Asian Pacific Islander Americans make up about 50% of the burden of chronic hep B in the U.S., and so what this little kind of, we call it the waterfall slide or the cascade slide. So you can see the drop there from the number of people in the United States who have chronic hepatitis B to the number of people who are diagnosed. So only about 1 in 4 people in the U.S. are self-aware of their hepatitis B diagnosis, and it just gets worse from there. So only about 25% of people know they have it, but less than 10% actually get into care and treatment. So why is this a problem? Well, so people who have chronic hepatitis B are much more likely to die from cirrhosis, primary liver cancer, liver failure. In fact, 700,000 to 800,000 people die each year from hepatitis B, so it has significant implications. And hep B is the second leading carcinogen in the world after tobacco in terms of cancer deaths. So it causes more cancer deaths than almost anything else in the world. Yet we still don't talk about it, which is odd. And what we know is that about 1 in 4 people who are infected at birth will die prematurely. We also know there's significant underestimates of hepatitis B prevalence in the United States. So CDC estimates that there are about 800,000 people in the U.S. who have chronic hepatitis B. You'll notice that I use a much larger number of 2 million because there have been studies that show that it is actually a lot higher than that. CDC comes across those numbers primarily through NHANES, but also through some Sentinel site data throughout the U.S. There are a couple problems with this estimate. First off, there is a lack of systematic surveillance in the U.S. for hepatitis B. There's almost no chronic hepatitis B surveillance in the U.S. There's no infrastructure for it. There's no money for it. And Asians and Pacific Islander Americans are highly underrepresented in NHANES. NHANES is really great in doing what it was supposed to do, which is to track obesity and other kinds of issues. It's not really good at tracking hepatitis B, and particularly among Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders. And we know that there are barriers to participation. It has been well documented that among Asians and Americans and Pacific Islanders, particularly among foreign-born and limited English proficient individuals, there are serious barriers to participation in NHANES. So CDC came out in 2011, 2012 and worked with NHANES to oversample non-Hispanic Asians, which did something. So it was a nice effort. They increased the sample size to 13%, and what they did find was that among Asian population, there was a tenfold greater prevalence of infection compared to the other compared to others. So obviously oversampling helps a bit, but it certainly doesn't do anything to address the barriers to inclusion, particularly among those who are hardest to reach, who are also the same people who are the most likely to be infected. So why do we care about any of this? We think it's really important that we know a little bit more about who has hepatitis B in the United States so that we can address it. Having a holistic view and a detailed view of the epidemiological landscape will allow us to then develop more targeted and hopefully more effective interventions. So what across the country, there are communities that are trying to supplement data with community-based screening, and that's something that we've done in Philadelphia. So the purpose of the study in Philadelphia was to address some of the critical knowledge gaps, to try and really figure out what the epidemiological landscape of chronic hepatitis B infection was or is in high-risk communities in Philadelphia, because we really didn't know it. And saying something like 1 in 10 Asians and Pacific Islanders doesn't tell you anything about who has hepatitis B in Philly, and it's not going to tell me how to address it. So we really wanted to see, you know, what hepatitis B looked like in Philadelphia, and try and determine, to see if we could determine some of the factors that were associated with infection and immunity, and then to potentially, hopefully, see if this is something that we could help other sites across the U.S. do. We looked at data from 2,047 high-risk foreign-born and second-generation Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders in Philadelphia. The project was initially, so this is a smaller part of a bigger project that collected both qualitative and quantitative data. I'm only talking about the quantitative data today. All of the data were collected at community screenings throughout the city of Philadelphia from 2011 to 2015. And these are the research questions. We wanted to look at the prevalence. We wanted to see what the characteristics were of people who were infected, demographic characteristics, family characteristics, and other characteristics that are known have known to be associated with either infection or immunity. So we did collect data at community screenings. Everyone who was eligible for screening was asked to fill out a survey form in language. We collected basic demographic information, but we also looked at immigration history, family history of either hepatitis B or liver cancer, healthcare usage, and also personal history of hepatitis B services, either personal history of Hep B screening or vaccination. And then along with that survey, we collected blood, which was analyzed to look for current infection with hepatitis B or protection. So we wanted to see who was protected, who was infected, and who was still susceptible. And just, this isn't part of this, but every person who was tested was navigated into care appropriately. So this is part of a CBPR program. We have a community-based coalition in Philadelphia called Hep United Philly. We have over 75 organizational partners, and we do patient navigation for individuals who are infected as well as individuals who need vaccine. All the data were analyzed using FAST-9.3. We did univariate and multivariate logistic regression to look at the independent effects of related variables on either infection, immunity, or susceptibility. So I'm sorry about all the numbers, but I just wanted to highlight a couple things. So first off, 60% of the people who came to screenings were women who participated in our screening. So right there. Big problem. Not unsurprising, but we had much more participation from women. We actually had more participation from younger people than we expected, particularly since we were in churches and at health fairs a lot. We expected older folks, but we actually got quite a few younger folks. About 91% of the people we tested had limited English proficiency, and if you look at their healthcare usage, about 60% had no health insurance, and about 60% did not have a primary care physician. In terms of family history, about 12% knew that they had a family member who had hepatitis B, and about 8% knew they had a family member with liver cancer. So you know, not low rates. And another about 8% were living with someone who had hepatitis B. In terms of previous testing, about 21% recalled that they had previously been tested for hepatitis B. That's really low, by the way. Around in the U.S., studies have found testing rates of between 20 and 30%. So it's still low, considering 100% of them should have been tested, and about 18% recalled receiving vaccination. We had an overall infection rate of a little over 8%, and about 58% were protected, and the rest were susceptible and needed vaccination. So in terms of the linkage to care, this was at 3 months, which means, so the numbers are a little bit low. There were significant, obviously significant barriers to care, but, and that's, the data aren't here, but if we go out to six and 9 months, we actually were able to navigate about 85% of people into care, and the rest we had either lost to follow-up or people who left the country. So in terms of Hep B infection, adjusting for all other variables, those who were infected tended to be male. They either had a family history of hepatitis B or liver cancer, or they were living with someone who had Hep B. They had a high school diploma or less, and they had a previous, and or they had a previous test for hepatitis B. So those who had been previously tested were more likely to be infected. And that's not surprising. What we have found at our community screenings is very often people come back to get tested to see if they're still infected because they don't have primary care. So that wasn't too surprising. And there have been, it has been shown before multiple times that men are more likely to be chronically infected than women, so that wasn't that surprising either. In terms of hepatitis B immunity or protection, adjusting for all other variables, people were more likely to be immune if they were younger, between the ages of 18 to 29 and born in Korea. The age makes perfect sense because these are the people who would have been targeted for routine vaccination either at birth or during adolescent catch-up vaccines. Born in Korea, actually, we found out it did make sense as well. There was a huge hepatitis B and liver cancer screening program in the 1980s and 1990s run by Fox Chase Cancer Center, primarily targeting Korean individuals. So they vaccinated actually over 10,000 people at that time, so that made sense as well. What's interesting is the next slide is that people were less likely to be vaccinated if they self-disclosed as a refugee, if they had refugee status. And that was really interesting to us. It's something we've never seen before. So folks who come to Philadelphia and go through the refugee resettlement program are supposedly, the guideline is and the practice is that they are automatically tested for hepatitis B and vaccinated if they don't test positive. And we work with Jefferson Medical College to do that. So this is really interesting because refugees should have been vaccinated. And clearly, so what this indicates is there's a breakdown somewhere. And this is really good for us to know because now we can try and, the infrastructure is in place. So now we're working with Jefferson and with the Refugee Resettlement Program to try and figure out what's going on here. So some study implications. What we know is that Philadelphia Asian and Pacific Islander communities have high rates of chronic hepatitis B infection. The 8% prevalence, that's among the highest in the country. And that shows us we really had no idea where we stood. And what we know is now we need more resources to address the issue in Philadelphia. We really do feel like community-based studies can help us better understand the epidemiological landscape of chronic Hep B among high-risk communities. To me, these data are way more useful than the NHANES data or, overall prevalence numbers. These are the kinds of data that every city needs, every community needs, because we all know that in order to address these health issues, we need to know the populations that we're working with and that are working with us. And I guarantee what I found in Philly is not what folks are finding or would find in New York and LA and San Francisco and Houston and Chicago. But if we all do this kind of, if we all have the funding and the resources we need to do in to collect this information, we can develop more targeted interventions for the future so that we can really meet the needs that are there. So now in Philadelphia, in the future, I know that I need to be reaching out to men. They're less likely to be screened and they're more likely to be infected. Well, that's great for me. I can now take the little resources I have and target my interventions and save resources at the same time. I now know I have to be working with the refugee resettlement programs. I know that I'm reaching younger adults, so I can kind of keep doing what I'm doing with that. And so that's the information that is helping us not only to have more effective programs for the future, but also more efficient. We're all working with very limited resources, so now we kind of know how we can use those resources. There were obviously study limitations. This was done as part of a cross-sectional, not randomized study, so we can only look for associations. We can't make any kinds of inferences about causality. I wouldn't even think about generalizing any of this beyond Philadelphia. But hopefully, the methodology could be used in other places. This was all done as part of Happy United Philly, and these are just some pictures of what we do. And there's our liver mascot, Oliver. He's awesome. So if anyone is in New York or Philly and wants Oliver to come to their event, my husband's in there, and he is happy, and he does it for free. So he will come be Oliver at your event. Just call me. And that's it. Thank you.